Morning, John. All right, let's get started with prayer. The Lord be with you. Let's pray. Holy God, for the beauty of this morning, we give you thanks. May the greatness and joy of creation fill us with wonder and awe. We thank you for this time together to worship, to pray, to lay our lives before you as an offering. In your holy name we pray. Amen. Amen. All right, great to have everybody. I'm trying to cut off just a little bit of what I want to do into a manageable time. I thought about trying to tie a lot of what I have to say to the play that I did last January called The Bare Gospel, and I'm going to do a little bit of that, but there's quite a bit of material on resurrections in Mark. That material greatly informed how I thought about the play and how I constructed the play and what I thought were the central images of the play, but I want to kind of go in detail about resurrection because a lot of this is not apparent just looking at the text, partly because we read the text as we should, obviously, in English. Were we to read it in Greek, it would be apparent that Mark is meaning for you to see lots of different nuances. That would be more apparent if you were listening to it, if you were one of those early church communities that was listening as the gospel was read orally, as it usually was. And then certainly if you were looking at it on paper. So Jim pointed out that once, I think last week, I advertised this as the six resurrections in Mark, and now it's just five, so we lost one in the last week. It changed because I altered this, what do you call that, a preposition? I put by Jesus. The sixth resurrection is the resurrection of Jesus, not by Jesus. How about now? Look at that. The Lord provides. All right. So let's start with the sixth resurrection, which is the resurrection of Jesus, the resurrection that we all know. Let's start with what we all know, okay? Sixth resurrection is in Mark chapter 16, verse 6. Only eight verses at the end of Mark to describe the resurrection of Jesus. Shockingly short. Different in all the other Gospels. What is Mark up to? Either the manuscript was lost, he had more and we just don't have it, or Mark was up to a kind of incredible ancient literary device. There's a good argument either way, but here's the resurrection that we all know. This is really the only reference to the resurrected Jesus. All through Mark, Jesus talks about his resurrection, predicts it three times specifically, and then instructs, we'll see it in a minute, instructs the disciples about what they're to do when he's resurrected. Jesus himself uses the word resurrection to describe what will happen to him, but this is the only instance in Mark of Jesus being described as resurrected. It's by an unknown person, just a person in a white robe. I'm not going to get distracted by talking about the white robe for 30 minutes, even though that would be great. All right, let's look closely at this word in Greek. There's a really great resource online on BibleHub.com. It's called the Interlinear Text, intertwining English and Greek together. And so up here, let's see here, this line 6 is what the Greek manuscript looks like. Above it, you have the transliteration of Greek into our English alphabet. And below it, you have a... Hello? And below it, you have a very literal rendering of the passage. And so if I was to read this in English, first of all, I do not know Greek, okay? I'm not trying to pass myself as someone who knows Greek. I'm sure I'm going to make some mistakes for anybody who knows Greek. So if I was to read this in English, the kind of most literal translation of verse 6 is, "And he says to them, 'Not be amazed. Jesus you seek, the Nazarene, the one having been crucified, he is risen.'" Not he's here, not he's here. "Behold the place where they laid him." Okay, so there's the Greek word. The Greek word that is for resurrection. Let's take a close look at that Greek word. It comes from this root. This is the root of the Greek word. The way that you say this Greek word is ageru. So here's the root. King James translates it variously: lift, raise, rear up, rise, arise, stand, take up. The NASB translates it risen. Some different ways that it's used is to awaken. When you use this word, to awake, to get up, to rouse from sleep, from sitting or lying, from disease, from death. If I was to tie this presentation to the play, I would spend a lot more time talking about this part. The through line for the Gospel of Mark, for me, begins in chapter 4, and it goes all the way through Gethsemane, and that is Jesus telling the disciples the most often repeated phrase, "Listen, keep wake, keep watch." Good morning, welcome. So that spiritual discipline of what it means to actually follow Jesus, which is listening, which is keeping watch, which is keeping aware, being aware, keeping vigilant, that central spiritual discipline is tied to the very idea of resurrection. Look at this. To rouse, to keep awake, to rise up. So to keep awake and resurrection are spiritually tied together. But we're going to continue on. Okay. So that is resurrection from chapter 16. That is the word Mark describes the most important thing to happen in the gospel, and that is Jesus being raised up. There are three instances in the back half of Mark using resurrection, this word, Egeru gets used, the root gets used three different times, twice in Mark 14, once in Mark 16. In Mark 14, it's Jesus instructing the disciples, after I'm raised up, I go before you to Galilee. So Jesus' instruction to the disciples is after he gets resurrected to go back to Galilee. One of the interpretations of Mark is that the reason there is no ending to Mark, or the ending is incredibly truncated, is Mark is trying to demonstrate what Jesus asks of the disciples, which is, you get to the end, start back at the beginning. What wasn't understandable the first time will be understandable now that they have witnessed the resurrection of Jesus. And if that's right, it makes sense of this next fact, which is that term, egero, is used 5 times in the first half of Mark. Something they could not have understood while they were experiencing it, but after they saw the resurrection, Mark uses that word, resurrection, egero, to describe 5 events where Jesus resurrects people that he encounters. I'm going to go through each of them, but just notice, so I've given you the word as it is, not the root, but the word as it's used in each of these verses. The root each time is egeru. This 1543, don't really understand this, but they've marked each root Greek word in the interlinear text so you can easily track where it gets used, not just in Mark, but in each of the Greek gospels or in the epistles. But I've noted down here the person to which Jesus resurrects. And in those 5 resurrections, the first half of Mark, Jesus in chapter 1 raises a woman. Chapter 2, he raises a man. Chapter 5, he raises a girl. Chapter 9, he raises a boy. Doesn't take a degree in literature to realize that Mark is symbolically showing Jesus resurrecting the full of humanity. Each category of person, symbolically. The fifth is Bartimaeus, and we'll look at that if we have time. Bartimaeus is the summary resurrection. Mark does this oftentimes where it's the very last act before Jesus turns himself to the cross, to Jerusalem. It's his kind of last Judea, Galilee miracle, and Bartimaeus is kind of a summation, a capstone of the resurrections. All right. First resurrection. Mark chapter 1. This is the very first story of Jesus healing someone. And so it's, I think, right and kind of shocking, or at least it was to me as I was kind of going through this, that the Gospel of Mark is bookended with resurrection. Very last miracle is resurrection of Jesus. The first resurrection is by Jesus. As soon as they left the synagogue, they entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Now, Simon's mother-in-law, this is the only instance that we have of one of the disciples being married. So interesting what details Mark decides to share with us and which he doesn't. Does not tell us Simon's mother-in-law's name or who Simon's wife is, you know? God, would have loved to know, but what we get is Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever. They told him about her at once. He came and took her by the hand and lifted her up. Some of this stuff got lost to us, but that the early church would have seen this as a resurrection, But we know that they would have seen it as a resurrection because every icon of Jesus resurrecting us fills this imagery. You guys have seen them? Jesus is reaching out, grabbing the people in Hades, and lifting them up. That imagery, that iconographic imagery is reflected in the Gospel of Mark each time Jesus resurrects someone. I don't know, I kind of feel like this is a mic drop moment. How many of this is familiar to you? How much is this all new? Does this sound crazy? Matthew? Yeah, crazy? Pretty good. Okay. Second resurrection. Paralyzed man. This is the story about the group of friends. There's four of them who can't get to Jesus because of the big crowd. They remove the roof to let the paralyzed man down by the mat. There is this great exchange between Jesus and the scribes. You know, it's interesting to think about, I mostly am against magic. To think of the Bible stories as magical. I'm not, you know, if you want to read it that way, go for it. It says that the scribes were sitting there questioning in their hearts, why does this fellow speak in this way? And what's he speak? He tells the person who's paralyzed that his sins are forgiven. They say, why does he speak this way? It is blasphemy. Who can forgive sins but God alone? Blasphemy is what they charge Jesus with just before they execute him. That charge happens at the very beginning of his ministry, not the end. And if you're sitting there thinking that someone is committing blasphemy, which is a sin punishable by death, imagine what your face looks like, okay? So Mark tells us that Jesus perceived in his spirit, you know? Do I think that Jesus had telepathy? Maybe. I don't think he needed telepathy in this moment to figure out what was written across these guys' face. But what Jesus does do is he calls them out on it right there. He brings it to the fore. Jesus perceived in his spirit that they were discussing these questions among themselves, and he said to them, why do you raise these questions in your hearts? Again, it's just Mark tells us these stories so quickly. That first resurrection story, it's just one sentence. Kind of doesn't tell us the fallout. He doesn't tell us how people reacted. So he says it's easy for us to read them quickly. But this question, why do you raise such questions in your heart? Is really worth pondering. When an act of goodness happens in your presence, do you think about status? Or are you drawn to the goodness itself? That is not just a question that the scribes struggled with, it is a question we struggle with. When we encounter goodness or evil, for that matter, are we drawn to process objections? You did it, that's good, but you didn't do it the right way. Process objections are concerned about status, about institution, and Jesus says, why? Why do you go to that in this moment? Which is easier, to say to the paralytic, your sins are forgiven, or to say, stand up and take your mat and walk? There's a lot to say about this. There's a lot to say about this, and we could, you know, obviously spend a whole time this morning talking about this passage, but let me just connect to you the theme, and that is, if I'm right about stand up here, which is also egeru, which is also the Greek word, the root for resurrection, or the Greek root that Mark uses to indicate resurrection. What Mark is symbolically offering up for us is that resurrection is tied to the forgiveness of sins. And to take out the negatives, it would be resurrection is, does he say easy, which is easier? Resurrection is just as easy as forgiveness is. Those two are linked. There is no resurrection without forgiveness. There is no forgiveness without resurrection. They are the same thing, is what this passage suggests. But so that you may know that the Son of Man, first time Jesus uses that description of himself, Son of Man, another literal translation of Son of Man is the human one. He's the just judge, the judge who only cares about the goodness and justice of God. The Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins. He said to the paralytic, I say to you, stand up, take your mat, and go to your home. And he stood up, immediately took the mat, and went out before all of them, so that they were all amazed. The resurrection, Jesus' resurrection is also forgiveness. Isn't this great? Yeah. This is kind of fun. It's kind of fun. Okay. All right. More to come. More to come. Resurrection number three, Jairus' daughter. This is a kind of a famous, they call it, I'm going to forget the fancy term. The unfancy term is a Markan sandwich. Mark will start a story, stop the story, tell another story, and then return to the first story. This is the second half of that full story. The first part of the half is Jairus is a leader of the synagogue. He goes to Jesus. He falls down before him and asks him to heal his daughter. What's interesting about that first half is this is one of the only accounts of Jesus interacting with the powerful and the privileged in a mostly positive way. Jairus is a leader of the synagogue. Jesus mostly has a confrontational relationship with the religious institutions that he encounters. But in this, so let me just decode that one more second. Jesus, some of the hardest and harshest things, judgment that Jesus shows is to the political institutions and to the religious institutions, but Jesus is not ideologically opposed to talking to them. If there is interest in them walking a resurrected life, Jesus will talk even to the powerful. He does not exclude them on principle, I will not talk to you if you still have power. Jesus is willing, even with Jairus, to meet him where he is. Okay, so he goes with Jairus. They get to his house, and people from the synagogue say, your daughter is dead. Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher even further? Again, you could imagine Jesus being like, I don't care what those people are saying, but he calls it out. He addresses Jairus directly. Don't be afraid, only believe. He takes just Peter, James, and John with him to the house. There's a crowd outside, weeping and wailing loudly. Jesus says, why do you make a commotion? The child is not dead, but sleeping. Very interesting description of Jesus about what's happening here. Whether the child is actually dead or sleeping. And they laughed at him. That word laughter, if I had a wish for something that I wish was in either the Gospel of Mark or any of the Gospels, is to have one story of Jesus laughing. We don't have it. I can't believe that it wasn't often how Jesus taught. The stuff that he says to the disciples is often hilarious. If in a kind of a deadpan way. To my knowledge, I'm almost positive that this is the only instance of laughing in Mark, I'm not sure about the other Gospels. What I will say about this is one of the concerns that Jesus has most prominently with people is their insincerity. It isn't that the religious leaders are wrong about the rules. It's that they are insincere in their interest about them. Jesus describes them as having a hardness of heart. And here too, we see laughing, but it is insincere. Is that what you call insincere when people are laughing at you? Maybe it's sincere mockery, I don't know. But they're laughing at him, put them all outside. Put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who are with him, taking her by the hand, he said, Talitha kum, or come. Talitha kum, which means little girl, get up. Again, the iconographic symbol. Jesus takes her by the hand and lifts her up. It's the image of resurrection. Immediately she stood up. She's 12 years of age. 12 years, anytime you hear a number, in an ancient manuscript, that number is not just a historical fact, it is symbolic of something. 12 years, 12 tribes of Judah. This little girl represents the hope of Israel. Israel is at the point of death. In fact, some say it has already died. And for Jesus, the people of Israel may still be resurrected. There is hope even for the powerful. He strictly ordered them that no one should know this. See, it's another trap for me to fall in. Talk a long time about Jesus not wanting these things to be talked about. Mostly, I'll just tell you very directly, I think what's happening there is it's silence, silence, silence until they see the full resurrection. And then it's go back, let the whole world know. But right now, you don't have enough information to be witnesses on my behalf quite yet. Oh boy, here's a big one. This passage is the passage that when I started memorizing the Gospel of Mark, is for lots of reasons. I didn't start off wanting to memorize the Gospel of Mark. And in fact, I had the opposite. I didn't want to spend that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But I started doing some and I was like, I can't stop. It was so compelling. I kept going. And when I got to this story and I was reading this passage out loud, I thought, I've never heard this in church. This, rightly so, but I never heard this in church. The Father's voice breaks. Oh, well, let me describe the story first. And when I was saying it out loud in this process of memorization, every time saying this passage brought me to tears. Every time. It is one of the most emotional passages outside the crucifixion in the Gospel of Mark. I thought, I have got to find a way to share this story using the voice that I think is best for it. So here it is. It's right after the transfiguration, the disciples, Peter, James, and John find the rest of the disciples. They're arguing with the scribes about something. Jesus says, what are you arguing about? A man comes forward. Someone from the crowd answered him, Teacher, I brought you my son. He has a spirit that makes him unable to speak, and whenever it seizes him, it dashes him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. And I asked your disciples to cast it out, but they could not do so. Jesus answers the disciples, or the scribes, the people around, how much longer, you faithless generation, how much longer must I be with you? How much longer must I put up with you? Bring him to me. they brought the boy to him. When the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy, and he fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the father, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood. It has often cast him into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you are able to do anything, help us. Have compassion on us. Jesus said, if you are able, all things can be done for the one who believes. Immediately the father of the child cried out, I believe. Help my unbelief. When Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, you spirit, what keeps this boy from speaking and hearing, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again. After crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out, and the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, he's dead. But Jesus took him by the hand, and he was able to stand. Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he was able to stand. When he had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, why could we not cast it out? He said to them, this kind can come out only through prayer. Any number of things would like to hear more about. Mark skips right from the resurrection to the disciples' response. Why does Jesus say, you faithless generation? I get the sense that the disciples didn't see the boy as worthy of being healed. They could have healed him. They could have honored him. But they didn't. Hardness of heart. Mark doesn't tell us. I don't know. Jesus is upset that still in this late moment of his ministry, there are children in their midst that the disciples, for whatever reason, can't see that they are responsible for in their healing. Last resurrection, Bartimaeus. It's a summative resurrection in that it combines the blindness which Mark has used to describe those around him, especially the disciples, that they are in the midst of Jesus and yet they are blind. So we have Bartimaeus, who is blind. He calls out Son of David. Really interesting use of words here. Title Son of David. Son of David is a title that Jesus does not accept. But still, Bartimaeus calls it out. The disciples, it says, many sternly ordered him to be quiet. Mostly get the sense that Mark has in mind here that the disciples are the one who silenced Bartimaeus. Maybe it's the crowd. It makes more sense in my mind that it's the disciples, because they've sternly ordered others to be quiet for getting in the way of Jesus, as perhaps that boy did with his father in the previous chapter. Jesus stands still. As priests, but also all of you as pastors in your own right, This moment in the wilderness, Jesus taking a deep breath, standing still, it is the preconditions of spiritual healing, being able to see. Jesus stands still and says, call him here. Call him there. If we're to look at the Greek, this is just what Jesus does to the disciples. He calls them. They call the blind man, saying to him, take heart, get up. He is calling you. Throwing off his cloak, so the blind man was not without possessions. He still had something. The first act of discipleship is to get rid of that last thing. Threw off his cloak, his last worldly possession, sprang up, came to Jesus. Jesus said, this is the question that Jesus had just asked the disciples, what do you want me to do for you? In the previous chapter, they said, appoint us to sit at your right and left hand, you know, in power. So Jesus asks this man who has nothing, literally nothing, and is blind, what do you want me to do for you? So Mark holds Bartimaeus up as an exemplar of faith in the way that the disciples had just failed. You know, what do you want me to do for you? My teacher, all I want is to see. Jesus said to him, go, listen, your faith has made you well. It's the second time Jesus describes resurrection and, well, healing in those terms. This is the one dealing with resurrection. It's a remarkable thing for Jesus to say. In fact, if we were to write the story today, people would say, that's blasphemy. Only God heals. Don't say it's you. Right? But here Jesus is provocatively saying, I don't know how to redescribe it without sounding nervous or dangerous, but your power, your faith, your prayers, they have healed you. Immediately, he regained his sight. Finally, blindness is over, and he follows him on the way. On the way, that is the best image for what faith is, following Jesus on the way.
Look at that. Look at that, 35 minutes on the dot. Okay, y'all, that's five resurrections in the Gospel of Mark. I'm going to put this up. If you can come to this center spot to ask a question or make a comment, I'm going to get another mic because my mic died, Jamal. That way we can hear you, people online can hear you, and I will answer questions.
Thank you. All right, we're in business. Susan Flanders, Rock My World.
So Joshua, is this on? No. Is this on? Yeah, it is. You know, I find you an incredibly provocative, interesting teacher.
Thank you.
The Brothers Karamazov class. I always go out feeling like my head is exploding with whole new things.
Yeah.
You have just now, by taking that one word, which I didn't realize the Greek word, was the one used in connection with what I always thought of were a series of healings and one resurrection from the dead.
Yes.
But Mark uses the same word.
Yes.
And so at first it was sort of like, well, I don't believe that a dead body comes alive again. I just don't believe that that ever happened.
Right.
I believe powerfully in God's power to bring new life out of death.
Yes.
And so by bringing in those other things, which to me were healing, they weren't, except for in the case of, I think the, maybe none of them were dead.
Right. Yes. Very possible.
And in those days, you wouldn't know because they had they didn't have all the ways we do to know that somebody's really dead.
In fact,
dead.
Jesus presents that as a possibility himself.
Right.
Not actually dead.
So I started this session and listening to him thinking, well, he's taking the resurrection of Jesus and he's bringing all these miraculous healings into the same category.
Oh, yeah.
Now I'm thinking, well, maybe He's taking all these different kinds of healings, miraculous or not,
yeah,
but not really bringing people out of necessarily death, and putting Jesus in that as the culmination of that, which right. helps my belief in resurrection, because it isn't limited to something that I think could have never literally happened, but yeah. to all those kinds of situations when
yeah.
indeed
yes.
God brings new power or new life out of situations of death. And in the case of the Christian Gospels, it's through Jesus.
Thank you.
So thank you. Head's still exploding.
Thank you, Susan. Yeah, yes. I for a long time, and still do, as I think the gospel writers hoped, still struggle with the what of Jesus' resurrection. What is the mechanics? What is the mechanics of the resurrection? And did they just make it up? Is it beyond our knowledge? Is it, you know, it's clearly beyond our understanding, no matter what. Yes. All the stories Jesus is there for the raising. Right. Okay. So, can I make a suggestion about what I think is happening? Well, you know, can I? Yeah. Who's going to stop me? Okay. In the Mediterranean, ancient Mediterranean 2,000 years ago, the story of Jesus's resurrection spread like wildfire. What a doozy. Right? You've got the person that people are holding up as God incarnate. One, that God suffered, crazy, doesn't make sense in the kind of Greek mythological world. Two, that God died, why would you worship him? He's dead. He literally lost the fight, okay? Three, Jesus resurrected. Like, all of that was like a real humdinger of a story, and it also went against the very basic common wisdom that the people would have had. Here's what I think. Mark knew, as any great story would know, that everyone who might hear his gospel had already heard about Jesus' death and resurrection, and he wanted to put that resurrection into a larger context for them to understand it. And so he writes the whole gospel giving story after story of what resurrection actually will look like in your life, which is just how, and this is what liberal priests in the Episcopal Church get accused of doing, and that is taking the resurrection and making it into foo-foo story time healing bop. But look, that is exactly what Jesus does throughout the entire gospel. Resurrection literally means new life. And lots of these stories, I don't understand. You know, the boy who couldn't speak, it sounds like kind of straightforward epilepsy to me, and there's probably some parts of it that is true. But 2,000 years ago, this idea of like clear disease and spiritual oppression, it was all wound up into one. And I don't think anybody has the power to really delineate, well, here's exactly what did happen and what is, like, it's all wrapped up into one. We take it as that. But nevertheless, what we see happening is people in desperate need bringing their afflicted ones to Jesus, and the compassion of Jesus stops him in his tracks. He sees them, he lays his hands on them, he acknowledges their dignity, and the result is new life. Literal lifting up sometimes, literally him picking them up, but in each case, them rising to walk in new life. That isn't a story that we made up because it's hard. Jesus' resurrection is hard for us to understand. That is in every gospel, and Mark makes it so crystal clear that these are each instances of the same word he uses for Jesus' resurrection. Thank you, Susan. Who else? Come on. Jen, you got to get to the mic. John, come on. We got time for two.
As you were speaking, Joshua, I was thinking about not only raising the body, but what about the spirit as well?
Yes. Thank you, Janet. So, you know, it's really easy to misunderstand the Gospels. It's really easy to think, it would be really easy to think that if you have a physical disability, a physical non-normative condition, that what it's, you're the type of person that needs to be, quote, healed in order to get closer to God. It'd be really easy to read these stories that way. But then it would mean that literally all Jesus was interested in is people who were actually blind, bringing them to actual sight. But who are the most blind people in the Gospels? It's the disciples. It is a spiritual condition that Mark uses as a literary device to describe in a physical manifestation of blindness. I'm not saying that Jesus didn't actually heal people. Of course he did. But Mark uses it in a double way, a physical condition to speak about a deeper spiritual one. So what I started off with is that resurrection, to arise, to awaken, is also tied to Jesus talking about blindness. Resurrection also means seeing the world in a new way. Coming to have resurrected eyesight, which is to see, I think, if I was to give, you know, just to tell you straightforward, we can talk a long time about it, it's to see the world as abundance, not scarcity. It's to see our role as one of forgiveness and mercy instead of retribution and violence. John, last question.
Thanks so much for a fascinating study. I thought it was really interesting what you said in the summary resurrection of Bartimaeus, where you focused on the faith element. Your faith has healed you. Do we see that same faith element in all of the resurrection examples? Because it seems to me that, and you know, he says your faith has healed you, but the faith that the man demonstrated was hailing Jesus as the Son of David.
Yes.
And is it that same faith in Jesus, not in healing as some sort of magical thing?
Yes.
That we see.
What I understood your question to mean, John, I'm going to take a swing at the best I understood. What is it in them that helped heal them? The only other time where Jesus uses that phrase in Mark, your faith healed you, is the woman who had a flow of blood, who comes up behind Jesus and touches his gown and is healed, and he turns around, who touched me? And it says, in fear and trembling, she told him the whole truth of the story. The image that you have is people completely dispossessed of everything. They're completely marginalized on society. Literally, the disciples told the guy to shut up. The master is speaking, and they persisted anyway. Jesus recognizes in them some unbelievable power that motivated them through the hardest thing, which is to work through the shame of others and claim what you know is true. To speak out, even when the entire world sees you as nothing, as not valuable, as not having a voice, and to keep going. Jesus recognizes that as a person of faith, that type of courage and tenacity as a person of faith, and it led to their healing. That's time. We'll do it again some other time. Thanks, y'all. Really appreciate it.